Welcome to our two-part report called Sex Trafficking, Breaking Free from the New Slavery. This hour is all about men. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hello and welcome to KMOJ's continuing report on the impact commercial sexual exploitation has on our entire community. We hope to get you thinking and acting to help solve the problem. Our report is in two parts. You're listening to the part about men. You'll hear how some of us have been brought up with ideas that have hurt us and our community. Some of us have come around to new ways of thinking about relationships. Some of us are leading a new movement to redefine what it means to be a man. First, a reminder of what's at stake. Sex trafficking is a $100 billion global business built on exploitation and violence. Here at home, it can happen in people's homes or at clubs, on the street, in motels, in cars, and it's not always clear who is being hurt. Maybe this definition will help. Police call it prostitution when there's a buyer, a victim, and a trafficker who makes money from the deal. But really, it's trafficking whenever someone trades sex for something of value. Sex trafficking ruins lives. It affects low-income communities of color more than others. Sex traffickers prey on vulnerable youth. Many victims are homeless. Others have mental or physical disabilities or come from abusive homes. But there are men who are stepping up to stop it. This is why we're doing this program. Over the next hour, you're going to hear examples of men stepping up. We start with Tony Porter. He founded A Call to Men. The mission of A Call to Men is creating a world where men are able to express their emotions and women are safe.
I'm Tony Porter from A Call to Men. We're based out of New York City, and I'm here to hang out with y'all for about an hour or so and just have a conversation about manhood.
Oh, yeah. Just going to have another conversation about manhood. Like that's a thing. Well, it is a thing for Tony Porter. This time, he's on stage at the University of Kansas, giving a version of the speech he's been making for nearly 20 years.
So why is it important for me to talk to the men? Well, the reality is, if my outstretched arms representing all the men in the United States of America, there's about this many that perpetrate violence against women, 15% or so, and then there's all the rest of us.
Porter's point is that although most men are well-meaning, violence against women and its corollary, sex trafficking, those numbers have not declined.
The question I want to ask the men here to grapple with, to struggle with, to be with me right now on is, how is it that this many men get to do what they do to women in the presence of all of us good men?
A Call to Men says preventing sex traffic and violence against women is primarily the responsibility of men. A Call to Men wants to create a world where women and girls are safe and valued. Tony Porter challenged the men in the audience to rethink their ideas about manhood and what it means to be a healthy man. He says stereotypes about gender roles contribute to sexual violence, including sex trafficking. He says we men need to get out of our man boxes. The man box says we should be powerful, fearless, and dominant. But Tony Porter says the man box can be a trap for both men and women. The man box discourages both men and women from fully expressing themselves. This is not anything we men talk about a lot, what it means to be a man and what it should mean. Sometimes that conversation comes up only after a problem. In our report last year, we talked about what happens with some men after they've been arrested for soliciting sex. We visited a diversion program run by a survivor-led nonprofit called Breaking Free. Diversion programs are alternatives to jail time and a criminal record. Breaking Free offers a day-long diversion program in Ramsey County. It used to be called John School. Men spent a Saturday hearing from survivors about how they wound up in the life. They'd hear from someone like Nicole, a woman in her 30s who had a child by her trafficker.
Kind of hard to talk about. When we first got together, he promised me unicorns and rainbows and cotton candy and everything's going to be all peachy keen. 2 weeks after we were together, I didn't make any money one night and he beat me black and blue.
Breaking Free's John School had hoped that men would be shocked into changing their behavior, and maybe some of them were. But recently, Breaking Free decided that shaming the men wasn't the answer. Instead, it should listen to them. Breaking Free turned to Don Galt for help. Don Galt used to work in violence prevention for Ramsey County. Now he runs a nonprofit called Building Peaceful Community.
We start with a different set of goals. We definitely want them to understand the problem, but we do it by simultaneously really helping them look at who they want to be as men.
So Breaking Free retooled the Saturday program and no longer calls it John School. It's called Men Breaking Free now, and is more about men than about women. What is their story? What brought them to a point where they are paying for sex?
Number one, they don't understand. They don't understand the reality of trafficking. Number two, to the extent they're willing to share, they each come in with stories of their own damage.
Some men have disclosed about being abused as children. Some are combat veterans who talk about post-traumatic stress. Many have little experience talking about anger or emotion, especially with other men.
Today, the men just talked about when we asked them, you know, what was going on that made you think it might be okay to do this. They all started talking about getting pop-up ads on their phones and internet ads and really just being marketed.
Don Galt says none of this excuses what they did, but the conversation is helpful. For instance, the men think of things they can do when they're tempted to buy sex. They brainstorm ideas, talk to a friend, look at your daughter's school photo, go work out. They also discuss triggers.
Well, kind of the flip side of it, what are things that if your wife you have found may trigger you to start coming up to this line and maybe crossing it?
Alcohol, pornography. One man says loneliness. Another says anger. The format is more like a workshop and less like a lecture. It's clear as the afternoon wraps up, the men are not just phoning it in.
Based on what you learned today, is there anything that you're going to try to do differently in your life or try to seek in your life? And then if we could set it over here.
Well, the first thing that came to my mind was actually to go back to our list and to maybe get something like this going myself, you know.
We get conversations for men.
Yeah.
Because that's what we need.
You know, yeah, because, you know, you got AA, you got NA, you got everything else. You got other meetings for different things, especially gambling, you know.
Yep.
So why not more of these? You don't see any of these.
Yep.
Sitting out in the parking lot waiting to come in, I'm thinking I'm wasting my Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I've heard two women talk about the whole what happens, I've never done this before. And you guys have probably heard it a million times, but I haven't. So this really blows me away. So anything to sign up to try to help out is probably what I'm going to do. So.
One thing I did realize since I was military that they don't talk about prostitution there. No one in the military talks about it at all. I was there for 6 years. I did prostitution in the military for 5 years. No one talked about it at all. So I'm going to talk to one of my friends who's up in the ranking and see if they're able just to bring it up. Once a year, just to let them know what actually happens.
Myself, I would say just even opening up with the toxic masculinity, you know, to how you carry yourself and conduct others or women, your family. So having that awareness to get in touch with those feelings, those emotions, and also combat the triggers. And that's what I take from this and things I could do is just spread love, positivity, and try to be a better person.
The men come in the beginning at 9 a.m. None of them want to be there.
Suzanne Brown chairs the board at Breaking Free.
Their arms are crossed. They have sourpuss looks on their face, kind of grumpy, kind of mean, kind of scary. And at the end of the day, the men are in tears. The men are signing up to be advocates, to joining circles of men so that we can begin to change the demand.
They used to have someone come in there and basically yell at these guys and tell them that they're a bunch of dummies.
This is John Choi. As Ramsey County attorney since 2011, he has emerged as a national leader in the fight against sex trafficking. Not only does he prosecute traffickers to the fullest extent, he has helped change the way law enforcement sees victims. He wants communities, including law enforcement, to help victims get out of prostitution by helping them with housing, counseling, and other basic skills. He supports men breaking free, especially since it stopped simply lecturing men.
Now, what it is a little bit of that, but more importantly, it's to dissect the trauma or to dissect the things that are causing this behavior, going to kind of the root cause, way that they might see the world. And if they can get to a place where there's some rehabilitation and they're not going to do that again, we've changed the trajectory of one perpetrator to be not a perpetrator and something better.
Joy says while individuals may change their behavior, the demand for commercial sex is not any less than it used to be. For that to happen, social values would need an overhaul.
And so what I'm trying to encourage with the platform that I have is getting these types of conversations out there, because we really need to have them occur within families, within friendships, within community, within places of worship. Those are the things that will lead to a safer world for, if we're talking about it in a binary way of gender, a safer world for women and girls, and I think also a better place for boys and men as well.
Demand for commercial sex is not a given. It comes from the way we were raised, the values of society, and our individual experiences. In dealing with demand, requires that we go deep on all those things, our upbringings, our social values, and our personal histories. None of that is easy. For their part, survivors, mostly women, have been doing that work. And now, as you've heard at the top of the show, some men are doing it too. Men like Sam Simmons. The KMOJ community will recognize that name. He does a show here called Voices. And if you know Sam, you know he's a man on a mission to lift up our community. Sam is a longtime chemical dependency counselor and behavioral consultant who specializes in helping African American men. He keynotes conferences around the country, and he hosts an annual event in the Twin Cities called Black Men Healing.
Yeah, I knew I would get your attention if I talked about healing black men, because in and outside our community, we ain't healable. At least that's the way folks treat us, and we treat ourselves that way too.
Then Sam goes through the familiar grim statistics. Black children are more than 3 times likely to be poor than white children. Black children are twice as likely to die before the age 18. Intimate partner homicide is the leading cause of death for African American women between the ages of 15 and 45.
So we can't ignore the trauma. We can't ignore the trauma that's being done to us by others, but we definitely can't ignore the trauma that we've been doing to each other. And we in our community, we have no conversation for that.
But Sam is committed to talking about the hard stuff.
Because, you know, because we know we can deal with some trauma. We have evolved from adapting to trauma. We have incorporated trauma into the culture. Now, our young folks done took it to a whole nother level of trafficking that our young people don't know that what they call dating is trafficking.
Sam wants people in the community to recognize when behavior is self-destructive and destructive to the community. That's what trafficking is. But the first step to recognizing behavior is understanding what causes it to happen. That's what Sam is trained to do as a counselor. He talks about how slaves were bought and sold and how the legacy of slavery shows up in families today. But ultimately, the conversation is personal, and Sam offers his own story as an example.
I was raised in the projects. We wasn't quite poor. My daddy just was cheap. Now, our cars might not have been new, but we had little used suits and stuff because, you know, we was good Christian children, at least out in public. It's true. At home, we was terrorized. You know, all the domestic violence and drinking and, you know, we hid well. That's another way we have learned to adapt.
Sam and his brothers followed their father and uncles into the drug trade.
I come from a long line of pimps and drug dealers, and we were good at it and looked good doing it. But long line of disrespecting women.
But Sam became a father and now a grandfather. And he decided almost 30 years ago to turn it around. He got sober by taking stock of his life and taking a break from his family.
Sometime I had to be an individual to heal. I had to let go of my family long enough to be able to understand that they love me the best way they know how to be able to deal with them. If I don't do that, I'm not here. If I don't do that, I'm not sober.
Sam has told his story many times. Sam's leadership has had an impact on the community. One of his proteges is Brandon Jones. Like Sam, Brandon is a therapist who specializes in African-American wellness. Brandon also teaches in the master's program at Metropolitan State University.
We're doing individual presentations. In this course, we're also going to have group presentations. The individual presentation is called Complexity of Me, where we're doing kind of a self-exploration of who we are today and how we got here.
This class is for students getting certified as chemical dependency and mental health counselors. The class emphasizes how race, class, and power affect the relationship between counselor and client.
All right.
There you go.
All right. You're going to do fine.
Brandon's students are presenting PowerPoints on how race, class, and power have affected them. The goal is for them to become therapists who stop perpetuating the problems with the status quo.
Things that frustrates me about human services is when we have these conversations on trauma, they talk about it like, we need to heal. We need to heal this pain. And I'm like, that is a setup. I'm talking about people being healed like it's a destination. Like, you need to reach this point of healed. And I'm like, no, this is a journey.
Brandon Jones manages integrated services at North Point Wellness Center. That means when someone comes in to use the food shelf or for mental health counseling or job training, they know about all the other services North Point offers. What does North Point have to do with sex trafficking? It supports community wellness. It tries to stop sex trade by dismantling self-destructive patterns at both system and individual levels.
Being a black man, I feel like you're always responding to stressors and trauma, like all the time. So you have this concept of what the man is supposed to be from this Western archetype that a man is a provider and a protector. And what does that mean when you're black and you don't have the same privileges as other men do?
You have to deal with all the stereotypes.
Just like you're supposed to be this tough black dude, like you need to be listening to this type of music, you need to be having sex with this many women, you need to be driving this type of vehicle, you need to have this type of clothing on, and it's a box that we have accepted of what black manhood and masculinity is supposed to be, but it can look different and it should be accepted and also explored differently. we have stereotypes of the brute, the buck, the big black rapist, and things like this that is very dangerous to your psychological understanding of yourself, but also the kind of common understanding that people have of you. They see you as someone who's a danger sexually.
The day we visited Brandon Jones's team was at the hospital after a shooting to see if they knew the men involved and to see if they could help the families.
I don't know if you can repair the damage. I think the damage it's been done and it's so complex and it's been going on so long. It's just one of those things that's there. What I try to do is focus in, and what I try to do myself and in the programs that I manage is help craft ability for men to identify who they are and be comfortable being men, no matter what your sexuality is, no matter what type of man you see yourself as, you're comfortable with that identity. So we try to make sure that we create space to allow that development to happen and also allow it to be explored. Because if all you see for yourself is to utilize your body to make a living, whether that's through sex, athletics, or drugs, that is dangerous. Those things all have short lifespans, and that's not talked about in the community.
Brandon brings credibility, not just because he's a young black man, but because of his own life experience growing up in a violent household.
So when I talk about trauma and I do this work, for me it's professional and personal, because I was that kid. I could have easily just decided to sell drugs and say, forget it, and live between two of my baby mothers or whatever, right? But I chose to not go down that route because I knew how that route ended, because a lot of the men in my family have that route.
Brandon did not. His grandmother took him in. He graduated from high school, and while he struggled at the University of Minnesota, he also listened to a counselor. That counselor warned him that the odds were against him finishing, that the system wasn't built to support people like him, and that he had to buckle down and get serious if he wanted to graduate. Now he has a therapist license and 2 master's degrees. But for all that schooling, the main lesson he still uses is how to cope with trauma.
But I still have trauma. Don't get it twisted. I might have a middle class life, but I still have trauma. But it's different how I deal with it. I've gone to therapy. I've developed coping skills. I work on personal development. I have a good social support network. And I still get triggered. But guess what? I'm aware of that trigger. I built coping skills. I know how to deregulate my body. So if I'm overstimulated, I can calm back down. But that trauma never goes away.
Brandon expects to show his children a new way to be a man. He hopes to leave them a legacy of not just coping, but achieving. He knows the troubled men he sees at North Point may not be in the same place he is. He just hopes to show them a better way forward.
If they know that you came from a similar background to them, and they see that you're not that stressed out, you have a pretty good job, you're making positive choices, that has a huge impact. That gives hope to people, like, wow. That's why we hire folks from the community. It's like, I know you, we used to go to school together. And they're like, wow, you work here at North Point? And that gives them hope that something can change for them.
Welcome to our 2-part report called Sex Trafficking, Breaking Free from the New Slavery. We have created an hour-long program about women, and this hour is all about men. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
So far this hour, we've heard from men who've paid for sex. After a court-ordered diversion program, they vowed to think differently about their relationships with women. We've also heard from counselors who specialize in helping African-American men avoid getting boxed in by stereotypes. And now, we're going to broaden the discussion.
Welcome to all of you. Thank you for coming after yesterday's snowstorm. We were like...
This is Penn Tao, opening the first annual summit of the Men and Masculine Folks Statewide Network. Penn Tao is a Bush Foundation Leadership Fellow, using his award to help men become active partners in ending domestic violence and sexual assault. He works with Hmong men in particular to shift attitudes about the role of men in families. And on this day, he's talking to about 100 people, mostly men, in the conference room of the Minnesota Humanities Center. They have come from diverse communities all over the state with a common mission: to end gender-based violence, including sex trafficking.
Each community, each cultural community is different. They don't all look the same. And I think that that's the part that we really have to pay attention to, is that we know that one solution doesn't fit everybody. Like, as a Hmong man, how do I fully show up for Latino men?
Penn Tao has been doing this kind of work for 15 years. He says the movement is growing. More and more men are interested in helping to heal their communities.
The trajectory of where we're heading is really supporting organizations, supporting individuals to do what it is that they want to do in community, to engage men the way that they would like to engage men, and whatever technical support that we can give to those organizations and individuals would be great, and to also build community across the state from different groups of men who are actually doing this work.
Penn Tao is a longtime community activist who thought advocating for Hmong women was an important skill to have.
In the state of Minnesota, it's required that if you want to actually help support and be an advocate for somebody who's experienced sexual violence, you have to go through this 40-hour training. I went, and there was a full room of women, and it was me and this other gentleman, and the next day he didn't really come back. And then it was me only. And then since then, I've learned that it was not about saving these people. It was not about me having a good heart. It was much more about what it is that I could do with how people saw me and how people viewed me and how people relate to me as a man in this world, right? And as a man in my own community and as a man in this society. And the people that I then started to see, that the people who were actually committing the sexual violence looked like me, had the edge like me in society, and it was about power and it was about control. And so that's how I sort of started in this journey 15 years ago.
Penn started organizing groups of men to examine their core beliefs.
They were taught to not hit women and girls. People understand that, but the question becomes, like, why is it that they do it if they were taught not to hurt these people, but yet in the end they do it? So when you talk to people who actually have been committed to domestic violence programming or to sex offender treatment, you get to understand that, oh, much of why they believe they can do this is because of the notions of how they were socialized.
Penn has been working with civic leaders, many of them who are here today, on how sexism and racism have led to violence, including sex trafficking, in their own communities around the state. Being Hmong, Penn started there.
So, like, in the Hmong community, sex trafficking is something that is really hidden and invisible and is not talked about. Something that men know where to find the girls, quote unquote. They know those places, but it's not openly talked about in public settings. It's often talked about in very small circles of men. Oftentimes it happens when it's at family gatherings and men are just in the conversation by themselves, and they will use metaphorical language to describe what they went and did and how they went and did what they did. And they don't think about it as sexual violence. They don't think about sex trafficking as sexual violence because, again, they think that it's consensual. I paid for it. And she consented, but they don't understand, like, the whole behind the scenes of why and where this person is coming from, like, because they think that this person has just fully agreed to it.
Penn says that in his community, sexual violence can feel like a conspiracy.
like within the Hmong community or in some Asian American communities, we see that a nuance of having multiple quote unquote abusers rather than just one person compared to mainstream community. The woman may be seeking support from her mom or her mother-in-law, and all they really say is that, oh, that's how life is, so you should just stick it out and be patient, right? Or it could be the father-in-law, where the father is saying, you have no choice but to stay in that marriage. If you divorce him, we're not going to take you back.
Penn has been meeting with leaders statewide to learn about particular problems and solutions in their communities. At Penn's side is Comanche Fairbanks, a photographer and YouTuber who has been documenting those conversations. He's taking pictures at the summit, but he made time for a conversation about his own experience.
I developed relationships with females. I had no problem developing relationships with females as a friend. And like we would talk, and like a lot of the females, when we'd just be sitting, walking, or doing whatever, they would disclose to me about their rape and the violence that had happened to them. So it was like almost like every female that I ever known, we've all had that conversation. And like I felt so uncomfortable, and I felt kind of crappy about it because I didn't know how to support them or even how to respond. And like all I would end up saying was like, well, that's messed up.
Comanche says it wasn't just women who were sexually assaulted. He says where he grew up on the Red Lake Reservation, violence was part of his daily experience. Now he wants to figure out why.
It was so normalized that it was nothing to even like consider. That's where a lot of the block comes for people. Is like, well, I've done that with my friends, or I've told my best friend to do that, or I told my homegirl to do that, or we kind of did that with one another. The real thing is, like, if a person hasn't grown up in a culture or environment where respect is happening and they're not respected themselves, then they don't feel the respect, so they can't go out and give that respect. They don't know what respect looks like. They don't know what love looks like. They don't have it within them.
Comanche remembers being 5 or 6 years old when some other kids asked him to join in an assault on an older woman. And he remembers being assaulted himself.
I have had sexual assault happen to me, and I've got it like minimized. In my mind, I'm thinking like, what, if this was a female, you'd respond in a totally different way. But because it's me, a male, I'm supposed to suck it up. And that's what I've always had to do. And that's what I know a lot of other guys have had to do, just suck it up. And like, because we got to be strong, you know? And if we're not strong, then we're weak.
Comanche says it's time men stopped sucking it up. It's the only way to break the cycle. He wants to raise his own 7 children to be strong and healthy. He wants to do the work to be a better dad than he had.
Like, my father was a horrible person, but come to find out that his foster moms all sexually assaulted him throughout his life. So he grew up having this negative idea of what women are, and he couldn't control it because he never had a safe space to talk about the traumas in his life. So he became a horrible person. And that was the same with me. I never had no safe place to talk about the traumas that happened in, through my life, and how I was taken advantage of or anything throughout childhood into an adult. I never considered it sexual violence because I never knew the definition of sexual violence.
Since then, Comanche has learned the definition. He has been an advocate for victims, and he is a dad of 7 children. At age 40 years, he is helping many people by working on himself first.
Like me acting out in a violent way or in a violent manner was not because of me, it was stuff that was done to me, like, because I wasn't born to be a violent person. I didn't have all this understanding until it was done unto me, right? So, like, once I realize that I'm getting angry or I'm having these negative thoughts or I want to do something harmful, that's like a signal for me to like, all right, stop that. It's like, what is going on in my mind? Why is what's being triggered? You know, that's what I think that's what it's really about. It's just like knowing what your personal triggers are to stop from doing violent acts.
We've been listening to men talk about sexual violence, what causes it, and what can be done about it. We've heard them say that trying to interrupt the cycle of violence and exploitation means asking some hard questions of ourselves, our families, and our communities. In Minnesota, the Department of Health reports that 1 in 33 men has been a victim of sexual assault. That number is 1 in 6 for women. Young adults and children are especially vulnerable and especially likely to be assaulted by someone they know. These percentages are similar when it comes to sex trafficking. Women and girls are much more likely to be victims, but men and boys are trafficked too. In a moment, we're going to hear more from Sam Simmons about how to disrupt the cycle of sexual violence.
Welcome to our two-part report called Sex Trafficking, Breaking Free from the New Slavery. We created two programs on this topic, 1 hour about women, and this hour is about men. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Now we're going to spend some more time with Sam Simmons, who you heard earlier this hour speaking at a Black Men Healing Conference. He also co-hosts a show called Voices here at KMOJ. He speaks all around the country and has won many awards for his work strengthening African-American communities. One of the things he does here in the Twin Cities is run a group to help men just out of prison make sure they stay out. And that includes reminding them what the law says about sex traffic.
I'm Samuel Simmons, and I'm a licensed chemical dependency counselor and behavioral consultant. So when I work with men, I have them understand what trafficking is, what that means, and what that looks like. And they're usually surprised.
They're surprised because, like many people, the men Sam works with have thought traffickers were predators who came in from outside the community. But now law enforcement and victim advocates are spelling out what constitutes trafficking.
Just within the last, maybe been longer than this, but the last 5 years I noticed they started including pimping. And that wasn't always included in trafficking, at least in most people's eyes, right? Which brings up a whole different kind of piece, because when we're talking about in the Black community, pimping is not necessarily frowned on as in certain parts of the community as people would like it to be, right? It's almost a personality type in the community at times. And so the thing, and then we can take the word pimping and talk about the player, the man with the multiple women, right? And historically, Black men have been sexualized to a level that by mainstream that it ends up being part of the stereotype. And unfortunately, some of them play into the stereotype and feed their self-esteem from the amount of women they deal with and being appealing to women, and not realizing that some of that falls in the area of trafficking. Example, say you have a young man who has what he would call several girlfriends, and he has the one girlfriend, as in the we would say in the community, she's down for whatever. And he says, you know, take care of that dude over there. He got some rims that I want for my car. Can you do that? And that take care of might mean have sex with him. And I realize that's technically considered trafficking. Next thing you know, he's got a charge, right? And truly don't understand. Now, I know there's sometimes folks who listen to this. What do you mean he don't understand? Well, he don't understand.
So Sam breaks it down for him, starting with what the law says.
Once she says no, you let it be no and go about your business. No means no. There's no coming back, you know, and not understanding those nuances and not understanding that she can also say no at any process of this experience, okay, is something that's got to be presented to them early in a way that's not shame-based.
Shame is destructive, and shame is what many community members are used to.
So shame has been used a lot in our community, even on how we deal with our, being ashamed of our kids just being our kids, right? And when we start talking about sexual identity, there's issues there, the latitude that we don't leave for boys to talk about their shame or their abuse, being abused sexually by older women and not ever being seen as victims, right? I mean, I get a lot of my young men talk about not realizing they were sexually assaulted by older women because older men keep making them sound like, oh man, what kind of dude is you, man? Do women like you at that age? You know, and so now how do I talk about how the embarrassment about that? We have a lot of young men who use survival sex to live on the street and to make it and that kind of stuff, and helping them work through that in terms of their identity. Are they gay or are they not? You know, because we have such a narrow view on what sexuality is. So increasing their view of sexuality, letting them talk about their experience and not making judgments of those, because the thing about men, and I think true with women too, but especially men, they can be both victim and perpetrator. And if you're in a society that says only one can be victim and only one can be perpetrator, then we are doing young people, especially young people, a real injustice.
Like other leaders we've heard from this hour, Sam says men in his ex-offenders program and in the broader community have to take a hard look at history to understand their personal stories. For African-American men, that means really understanding the trauma inflicted by slavery.
When we talk about the African-American community, if you look in sociology books, what do they say? We're a matriarchal community, right? We didn't come here that way. How did we end up that way? Because of the need for the white male slave owner to let everybody know who was in charge.
Sam says slavery emasculated African-American men.
In every slave quarters, there was either a woman in charge, we'll call her Big Mama, or you have Uncle George, which was an old, non-threatening black man, right? So you go to slave quarters, master comes in, he talks to Martha, and he asks, what's going on? She answers for everybody and says, we're fine, we need some more grain. But master's in a good mood, and, you know, this little girl named Sally is 10 years old. He asks Martha, is she ripe yet?
What happens next depends on how Martha answers that question.
She might have to do some favor for the master to save both of them. So at the cost of herself. So she's done been conditioned to have to be accountable for all these other lives, even at the cost of hers sometimes. Right? So over time, some of us as black men have subconsciously learned to resent black women for that position because they've never been put out that position.
Sam says economic systems since slavery have made sure that in some cases, black women have power compared to men.
Only thing he got is finding ways to manipulate her and threaten her. You know, he doesn't have a lot of the other power. Female-dependent men who might not be trafficking or whatever, but they live off of women, right? Starting with their mamas on down to the girlfriends. It's this kind of love-hate relationship they have with women. You know, they can't live with them and can't live without them literally, you know, because they don't have no place to live.
Meanwhile, persistent stereotypes keep people tied to a damaging past.
Sex has always been used as black folks are highly sexed when it wasn't them who was raping them, right? It was the way to justify raping black women and raping black men at the same time, right? So you got this whole sick kind of history and exposure to sexual violence and that kind of stuff going on through the history and this kind of tension between black men and black women that's all been in the benefit of white males.
As a therapist who deals with ex-offenders, youth, and the well-being of the community, Sam is leading conversations that he hopes lead to healing.
Healing means you got to be truthful. And it's hard for the community to be truthful then when you think of healing means that you have to deal with the ugly, right? And the last thing that the black community wants to deal with is the ugly because we're always seen in an ugly light. So the last thing you want to do is admit we do have problems, and some of them problems we are causing as a result of the trauma. See, you can't exclude the result of the trauma, otherwise you pathologize it. It's not pathology, it's history. What's different in the black community is because we don't talk about this stuff freely, at least with young folks, they will say, Mr. Simmons, why don't nobody ever tell us this? So I'm not crazy. So this stuff did happen to us.
Not only did it happen to the men in Sam's group, it happened to Sam.
You know, it's like being introducing yourself to the group. I am your instructor, and I'm an angry black man. But this is anger class. I understand. I'm your instructor, and I'm angry. Well, how can you do the group? The difference between you and me is I accept the fact that I'm an angry black man, and I make adjustments so it don't cause me no problems. But if I have to deny that, then I deny the adjustments that I might need to make.
Earlier in the program, we heard Sam's keynote at the Black Men Healing Conference. This is Sam's core message. He wants men to be able to look at their own lives and sort through how their experiences and trauma may have led to behavior that got them into trouble. He talks about his own family's trauma and how he found a way forward as a young adult.
So I do family trees with my guys, and in the family trees, they identify what their family died of, was there domestic violence in the family, other kind of violence, and chart that. And then they get also the chart that they don't know nothing about one side of their family and how's that look. Because it's one thing to know it, but it's another thing to see it on a piece of paper and then talk about how that feels. Because that's a trauma too.
Sam wants the men he deals with to be aware of their trauma and to make adjustments to their behavior.
And so it's really about them. For the first time, we're talking about them. The first time somebody's listening to them. Because most men is like, what about me? Even the perpetrators, it's like, but what about me? Like the little kid, you would, no matter how vicious they were, you would hear this little kind of tone, little kid, what about me? So the young folks, they might get angry, but they don't stay angry, right? They're almost, oh, okay. Now that I understand this, I can empower myself by addressing the behavior and not continue to discount me as a person.
Sam knows healing is an ongoing task. The history of trauma and mass incarceration and the challenges of making a living these days continue to have a disproportionate effect on our community. But Sam is gratified to see that more people want to understand the historical roots of sex traffic.
Okay, the community, it could get better. We're at least having a conversation about trauma, you know, but we need to have a deeper conversation because my whole conversation about trauma is if we address the trauma, it will empower us to address the other issues.
Here in Minnesota, voices like Sam Simmons, Penn Tao, Comanche Fairbanks, Brandon Jones, and many others are working on solving a problem that is hundreds of years in the making. They join a chorus of national leaders asking men to rethink masculinity and what it means to be a healthy man and to take responsibility to end sex trafficking. That's what Tony Porter from A Call to Men asked. We heard him at the top of the program.
We have to begin to grapple with how is it that this many dudes do what they do to women in the presence of all of us good men? Why are we not outraged? Because I know we're not cool with the violence.
Add to the chorus the voice of Terry Crews, former NFL player and star of TV and movies. He is on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Yes, finally.
I've been waiting to get you on the show for so long. This is so exciting. First things first.
Yes.
Congratulations, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Woo!
Back on the air.
Besides Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Deadpool 2, Cruz is known for starring in Old Spice commercials and writing a book in 2014 called Manhood.
Because that's what you do. You break the mold of what people expect. Not only are you someone who played in the NFL, but is an accomplished artist and you design furniture. Yes. You are somebody who loves the funny side. You love the sensitive side. Your name became synonymous with the Me Too movement.
Yes.
When you were one of the first men who came out and said, hey, let me tell you about a side of toxic masculinity. Let me tell you about a side of sexual harassment that involves men.
Right.
And a lot of women gravitated to that because they went like, thank you for exposing how pervasive this is in Hollywood.
Yes.
And there were a lot of men who said, I can't believe this would happen to Terry Crews, and I can't believe Terry Crews would talk about that. Why was it so important for you to share something that many people would see as a weakness?
Terry Crews went public with the story of how his agent had groped him.
You get tricked into thinking it's part of the job. You know what I mean?
Right.
Somebody really crosses the line. You know, and it's really weird because when I look at like things like fraternity hazing, what they are, a lot of times, is sexual assault masked as something else. And it's wild because it's about power. It's never about, you know, sex or anything
right.
like that. It's about someone trying to dominate you and take over you or show off. And the fact, what happened to me was this guy was literally trying to show me he had my genitals in his hands, so
right.
to speak. And I'm sitting here, but he's also supposed to be the person who protects me.
Right.
He was my agent. And what's so crazy is that, you know, success is the warmest place to hide. And everyone feels like, my God, you know, well, how could he be this? He's so successful. He's all that. It's so, you know, counterproductive. But it's not. The thing is, successful people know that they can get away with this.
Terry Crews has acknowledged his own role in perpetuating what he calls toxic masculinity. He used to be addicted to pornography. Now he calls porn an intimacy killer and says it almost ruined his life. Now he's an ambassador for an international anti-sex trafficking organization called Polaris, named for the North Star.
If there's one lesson you would like to teach young men, if there's a lesson you wish men could learn from you, what is the one thing you wish all men would understand about toxic masculinity?
Well, my thing is, you know what? It's impossible to love someone and control them at the same time. And what happens is you've been taught, like men have this thing where if you must control your world, you control these things, and to be a man, you must have control. But you can't control other people. That's the issue.
This hour has been all about having conversations that can be difficult. We really appreciate that you've stayed with us through the program. We've heard from some leaders who have done the work of changing their own lives. As they talk about that work, they inspire others. While breaking free from sex traffic is a big undertaking, it starts with facing up to difficulties and having hard conversations. If we stick together and support one another, we can make our community stronger, healthier, and better. We hope you'll listen to our hour about what women are doing to stop sex traffic. You can find both programs on the KMOJ website.
This KMOJ special report, Sex Trafficking, Breaking Free from the New Slavery, was made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.